Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order, February 21st, 2024. With me today is Chairman Hoffman, Senator Bishop, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, Senator Wilson. Senator Olson will be joining us in a little bit. What we're going to do this morning is we're going to have public testimony, the start of it, on SB 186, the FY25 operating budget, SB 187, the FY25 capital budget, and SB 188, FY25 mental health budget. We got a 2-minute time limit, and we have a shorter meeting than normal. We'll have about an hour and 15 minutes or so. So try to keep your comments focused, particularly if it's just repeat testimony. We're smart enough to figure it out. All you have to do is agree with previous presenters, and you want the members to pay attention to what you say, and if everybody says the same thing, it's not effective at all. So that'll speed things up. We have this morning, we're going to have Juneau, Sitka, Cordova, Ketchikan, Petersburg, Wrangell, Prince William Sound, Kodiak, and others off net. And that's how we're going to do it. I'm going to start the meeting and go through a little bit of the list. And then I'm going to turn it over to Senator Keel, who's going to handle a lot of the Juneau folks. And then we'll just kind of go from there as we finish up. So please try to identify the budget issue you're talking about. If it's the operating budget, the capital budget, you don't have to use the fancy numbers or terms. And then try to speak to the piece of legislation in front of us. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and start with the Wrangell LIO from the city of Wrangell, Mr. Mason Villanerma. If he could identify himself for the record and speak to the budgets, please.
Good morning, Chair Stedman and members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Mason Villanerma, and I serve as the interim borough manager for the city and borough of Wrangell. I come before you today to advocate for the crucial $5 million FY24 supplemental capital appropriation dedicated to the Wrangell Dam Safety Upgrade Project. As most of you are aware, our community experienced a devastating tragedy on November the 20th, 2023, when a massive landslide claimed the lives of 6 residents and caused extensive damage to homes. Additionally, 71 residents were stranded without power and access to critical resources as a result of the landslide. This catastrophic event has underscored the urgent need to address our most critical public safety concerns, particularly the condition of our aging dams. Constructed in 1905, nearly 120 years old, our two dams are primarily composed of wood and earthen materials, making them susceptible to structural vulnerabilities over time. Recent engineering reports have highlighted significant deficiencies in both dams, emphasizing the imminent need for corrective measures to ensure the safety of our 55 homes within the inundation zone and to protect our sole water source on island. A particular concern is the heightened risk posed by heavy rainfall events, which have become increasingly frequent in our region. The accumulation of over 4 inches of rainfall in the 24 hours preceding the landslide, coupled with projections indicating that a five and a half inch rain event could result in dam failure, highlights the imminent danger facing our community. I am grateful for the unwavering support we have received from Governor Dunleavy, Senator Stedman, Representative Ortiz, and other state officials. With that, it is an imperative that we secure the necessary funding to address these critical infrastructure needs and safeguard the lives, health, and safety of our residents. The proposed $5 million supplemental appropriation represents a vital investment in the resilience and stability of our dams. By allocating these funds to the Wrangell Dam Safety Upgrades Project, we can take proactive measures to mitigate the risk of future disasters and ensure the long-term well-being of our community. I strongly urge the Senate Finance Committee to support this appropriation and prioritize the safety of the city and borough of Wrangell. Thank you all very much for your service to the public and for your attention to this matter.
Okay, thank you. Next up, from Valdez, Tina Russell.
Good morning. I'm Tina Russell, Direct Service Coordinator of Advocates of Victims of Violence in Valdez, also known as AVV. I'm testifying to increase funding for the grants line in the CDVSA budget within Department of Public Safety. AVV is the only organization providing crisis intervention, emergency shelter, advocacy, information, and referrals and community education to a region of over 1,000 square miles. With the shelter in the office located in Valdez, the staff must coordinate with other communities, including tribal organizations and outlying areas, to provide resources and develop a network of support for victims and their families. When AVV responds to a sexual assault up in the Copper River area, such as Kenny Lake, McCarthy, and other communities, travel is always a concern. AVV advocates coordinate with the law enforcement to take the victims out of the community at the earliest possible time. In some cases, travel is a problem due to road or weather conditions. If they cannot get to Valdez to stay at the shelter, we have to get the victim to another safe place. Advocates work with the victims through their entire process, medical appointments, law enforcement interviews, advocacy and accompaniment, assisted in securing a legal counsel, court appearances, provide with the victim's rights advocacy services, safe place to stay, referrals to other providers such as counseling and other essential services needed. To help community members, first responders, and local businesses respond to sexual assault cases, ABV organized a training in 2023 to educate the community. ABV initiated expert in the field of sexual assault response, such as Angela Ellis, medical forensic expert, state troopers, ABV prevention specialist, and myself. ABV continues to educate and to train community members, including elders in the community and natural leaders, about the issues of domestic violence and sexual assault. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we're going to come into the room. I'll call on two people. The first one will be Pat Bronson, if she can come up, and then followed by Delia Walsh from Ketchikan, if she can come up and take the other chair. And so when the first speaker is done, we'll call up another person, so we're not waiting for people to come back and forth, and we'll be able to have more testimony. So with that, Ms. Bronson.
Thank you, Chairman Stebbin and Chairman Hoffman, members of the Finance Committee. My name is Pat Branson. Thank you, and I am mayor of the city of Kodiak. I'm going to speak about the capital budget and our need for replacing St. Herman Harbor. As the largest fishing port in Alaska, Kodiak waterfront facilities and marine infrastructure are a critical element to our community, supporting the city's commerce, industry, transportation, and recreational needs. The economy of the city is based upon commercial fishing, including local, state, and federal involvement associated with support of the fisheries, as well as research and enforcement activities. In 2021, NOAA statistics put Kodiak as the third largest commercial fishing port in the United States in terms of volume and fifth in terms of value. Kodiak has a critical need to reconstruct our 40-year-old St. Herman's Harbor. The facility has exceeded its service life and continues to experience critical failures. The harbor is used by over 400 home-ported and transient commercial fishing vessels owned by residents and non-residents who participate in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska fisheries. The harbor needs regular and substantial maintenance to stay operational. We have purchased $103,000 in piling sleeves to maintain the harbor's aging infrastructure, but the decades-old facility's failure has greatly outpaced maintenance schedules. The need for harbor replacement is now. There's an extreme urgency to fix the floats that have failed and others that have temporary fixes. As the steel pilings corrode, temporary sleeves are installed with divers to prolong the life and prevent the loss of a float. Based on a scoping document completed by P&D engineers in December 2022, the project's total estimate cost for replacement is $60 million. Construction phasing recommendations include $16 million for Phase 1 and $40 million for Phase 2. The city has submitted a grant application for funding from MARAD's Port Infrastructure Development Program for Phase 1, and the city has invested approximately $1.8 million in funds to advance the project to design. With these mix of funds, the city is moving forward with Turnagain Marine for layout and environmental permits for the reconstruction of St. Herman Harbor. We are requesting from the state financial support in the amount of $5 million to complete Phase 1 in the Senate bill, the capital bill, Senate Bill 187. We know that there are lots of other harbors that are in need of replacement and fixes as well. And so we would thank you for your consideration of this.
Okay, thank you. And I do know, Pat, that you're Branson, not Bronson. I just stepped on my tongue, you know.
great. I correct people all the time about that. So, thank you.
Rodney Dial, he can come forward, please. But we'll go now to City of Ketchikan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Delilah Walsh, City Manager for City of Ketchikan, representing a community deeply committed to the well-being of our residents. Regarding SB 188, I implore you to restore the $1.5 million in Crisis Now grants and $500,000 in Crisis Services grants. This $2 million in requested funding is now $750 in the governor's current mental health budget. In Ketchikan, we were able to use the grant funding to start a mobile integrated health program, which will be launched this April. We've hired two community paramedics and purchased a specially equipped healthcare vehicle to meet the needs of the community where they are. The MIH program dispatches mental health professionals directly to individuals in crisis wherever they may be. This immediate intervention can prevent unnecessary hospitalizations and incarcerations, saving lives and taxpayer dollars. Many of our calls are some of our senior citizens who simply want a ride to and from the hospital who utilize EMS services to do such. We'll be able to use the MIH to answer those calls. Our next step, if we can again apply for funding should it be restored, is to establish a stabilization center in Ketchikan to provide a safe, secure space for individuals experiencing acute mental health issues or episodes and offering them the support they need to stabilize and connect with ongoing care. Once these programs are established, we can begin billing Medicare and Medicaid and wrap those services into our general fund budget. However, we need the grants to help get them started. Since their inception throughout the country, these programs have demonstrated remarkable success. MIH around the nation has reduced emergency room visits and hospitalizations by 20%, while stabilization centers help up to 80% of their clients connect with long-term treatment. These programs are not just effective, they are essential. As you know, our state faces unique challenges such as remote locations and limited access to care. That can exacerbate existing mental health and addiction issues. In Ketchikan, we've experienced a higher rate of homelessness, and access to traditional health care can be limited. Please help us get the services to the people who need it most. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. Scott Arndt can come forward from Kodiak. Mayor Dial.
Yes, thank you. My name is Rodney Dial. I'm mayor of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, and thank you for this opportunity. So today I thought I would take a different approach and offer one solution, possible solution, to our shared fiscal problems. For years, the Ketchikan Gateway Borough's main policy issue has been the disparity of the required local contribution, state tax, imposed only in the organized boroughs and municipalities. Our concern is not so much that we pay it, but that so many other areas of the state that have the ability do not, and that it's not based upon ability. So, for example, places around Fairbanks, the vast region just minutes outside of Palmer, all the way to Valdez, and many more, all paying nothing to support education and basic services. And it's not just about what these places could do for the common good, it's the efficiencies that we would see with the mandatory borough formation. So, for example, Prince of Wales Island, a place with only a few thousand people, has three school districts. Not three schools, three school districts. My point with this is that people live in half the state, in the unorganized areas, or in many cases completely dependent upon the state and federal government. Because some who could choose not to contribute, the funding pie is smaller for everyone, and that's affecting the operating budget that you're dealing with today. Unorganized areas experience inflation just like the organized areas do. The difference is that they are essentially held harmless by the state, who in essence inflation-proofs their services and education each year. So my argument is that if you can do this for the unorganized areas, then at a minimum, the organized areas that are contributing should also be inflation-proofed, especially regarding education. I would encourage the legislature to do what is necessary for the long-term sustainability of the state and pursue borough formation. Until then, please adjust education funding in the organized boroughs like you do in the unorganized ones. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Next to come forward, Lori Morton, and we'll have Kodiak Island Borough, Mr. Scott Arndt, please.
Good morning, Senators. My name is Scott Arndt with the Kodiak Island Borough Mayor. As you heard Pat Branson, Mayor of the City of Kodiak, speak, Kodiak Island Borough supports their endeavors on their projects. We also have other projects coming up in the in the near future, one of those being hospital renovation expansion. Another thing that I'd like to speak to, I support everything that Mayor Rodney Dial said. I appreciated what his tact was. Also, the Hillcorp income tax loophole. It would be nice to see the Senate close that loophole. That's additional money that the state of Alaska would have for education needs and other needs. But that would greatly help. It's been too many years. It's been approximately 7 years. That's $700 million approximately that we've been shorted. Another thing is on Senate Bill 140, the original purpose was internet support. The House version is not acceptable. Need much more discussion on the issues, be it the BSA increase, be it pupil transportation, let alone the three-year experiment on teacher bonuses. It's an experiment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. And then next up would be Brenda Stanfill, if she can come forward. And we're going to have a brief at ease while we change chairs, and then Lori will start with you. Okay.
Come back to order. Ms. Morton, if you would identify yourself for the record and give us your 2 minutes, please.
Sure, thank you. Good morning. My name is Laurie Morton. I'm the Deputy Director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Office here in Juneau. It's good to see familiar faces around the table. Believing that this administration sees the importance of public safety, it's difficult to realize and have to highlight the proposed decrements to services to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault in the CDVSA grants line and the reduction to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, which is meant to compensate all victims of crime. You'll hear from communities throughout today and tomorrow reminding you of the critical nature of these services and what it will mean if funding isn't made available. I'm asking for careful review of the amount of funding available to victims of violent crime. The difficulty in reducing state dollars this year to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board is that it means directly reducing federal dollars the next year. Federal funds are allocated to states based on 75% of the amounts the state paid out in eligible claims during the preceding fiscal year. Mostly, I want to say that providing life-saving services for victims, something that y'all know, is not a party issue. Independents, Republicans, Democrats cross aisles when it comes to crimes involving domestic violence and sexual assault. Many of you were part of Governor Parnell's Choose Respect campaign. Some of you were here in the Knowles administration and were part of creating the first crimes involving domestic violence statutes for our state. On these issues, we work together as Alaskans, and we need your collective will to keep our doors open. Shelters and rape crisis centers are the justice system's emergency rooms. Like healthcare emergency departments, they're open 24/7, 365 days a year. They're ready at a moment's notice to catch people when they're falling. These programs save lives, and all of us as Alaskans deserve to have fully functioning emergency departments. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. If Mayor Weldon will come up for to be next, Ms. Stanfill.
Brenda Stanfill, Executive Director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence, so I'll just keep going on what Ms. Morton started. Today I'm also here to speak to you about the operating budget, the $4 million decrement that's currently in the Department of Public Safety Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault's grant line. This decrement will impact 24 regional support service providers for domestic violence and sexual assault victims, one statewide support provider for victims of violent crime, three educational programs for partners who abuse, nine child advocacy centers, four statewide and two regional programs who provide legal services for victims, one youth shelter, and 14 community prevention teams seeking to end violence in their communities. This $4 million decrement could mean decreased funding of 20% to the programs across all CDVSA grantees, or it may be that the CDVSA board decides to close programs. We don't know how this cut will be carried out. This is a cut the funded programs do not have the ability to absorb. CDVSA grantees have been flat funded for the fifth year this year. During this time, they've experienced increased utility bills. They've had to increase their pay to attract staff, which they're competing with Walmart, basically, and Walmart is not requiring them to work overnight shifts that they don't want to work, respond to SART calls after they've already worked a full day, and also not asking them to hear stories that create vicarious trauma in the person listening to them. They've also experienced tremendously high cost, and as we all have, the cost of food and supplies. And with all this, they've had to absorb it. The only place they've had to cut is their staff. So as they reduce staffing because they don't have the funds, they've still tried to continue to provide the same level of quality support to those that are out there, but they can't keep doing this. These programs are the thread that winds consistently through the system. They're connecting with the victim. They respond when a crime happens, regardless of whether it's reported to law enforcement. If it is reported, they continue to support the victim through the process of the investigation and prosecution. If they should decide to opt out of going forward or the system decides to opt out for them, the advocate is still there to support them. They're there, and when the court hearings, the trial delays, the trial days, and the days when the victim gets to give their impact statement. And then they're there when it's all done and the system is done with them, but the victim has not healed. And these programs are still there. They continue on beside the victim while they go through a divorce and custody trial. And they continue on with the victim as they attempt to heal and find hope again. I ask that you please reconsider this decrement and not only replace the decrement, please increase the funding. Flat funding is just not able to continue with these programs that we so desperately need in the state of Alaska. So thank you for your time to listen to my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. If Mr. Garrison will come out of the corner. Mayor Weldon, 2 minutes. Please give us your testimony.
Thank you, and good morning, Chairs Hoffman, Olson, and Stedman, and Acting Chair Keel, and the rest of the committee. thank you. First of all, I am Beth Weldon. Normally, you would know me as the mayor of the city and borough in general, but today I'm speaking as the president of the Alaska Municipal League. So thank you, first of all, to the Senate Finance Committee for your continued support of local government priorities. It's worth highlighting that many of the issues I want to highlight today were already addressed by this body in last year's budget. First item was recapitalization of the community assistance at FY24. The Community Assistance Fund only has $60 million available, which, if not addressed, will mean only $20 million distribution in FY25, a third of what would otherwise be available. $30 million is needed so that communities receive their maximum level of distribution. We appreciate the inclusion of that recapitalization in the governor's budget for FY25, but also need it in place this year to make the program whole. These funds are especially important for communities with a limited tax base who rely on the state revenue sharing to be able to generate services for residents. My second topic is school construction and major maintenance. I will say I'm not going to talk about the BSA because I'm sure many people are going to talk about that later, but it continues to be a top priority for the AML. AML members are supportive of increased funding available for school construction and major maintenance. Deed Facilities has said that as much as $289 million a year is what should be budgeted, and with a prior list of more than $500 million, we know that school districts are struggling to keep up with this critical need. Genoa alone has over $70 million of need in deferred maintenance. My next topic is harbor matching grants. AML members continue to pass resolutions in support of this program since the passage of SB 291 in 2006. It also should be noted that this has full support of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. We respectfully encourage reconsideration to fully fund this program in the capital budget and go one step further and suggest that additional fundings be available in this program to provide match available to communities that have successfully completed for federal grants to improve their coastal infrastructure. And lastly, I'll finish with matching grants. In thinking about infrastructure, we continue to work actively in support of making the most of federal infrastructure investment, which we've been encouraged to do. Any support from the state for matching funds will be an effective way to increase the success of our communities. The pilot program delivered by the Denali Commission last year should be expanded. We hope to as much as $20 million so that more communities can pursue federal grant programs without reducing their own capacity to meet local needs. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up will be Ron Garrison, followed by Joan O'Keefe. And I'll just remind all testifiers that we need to hold the 2 minutes so that everyone can get heard this morning. Mr. Garrison.
Good morning and thank you. Chairman Keel and members of the Senate Finance Committee, my name is Lon Garrison. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards, and today I'm speaking to you about education funding. The ASB Board of Directors has adopted three legislative priorities for this year. They are sufficient, sustainable, and predictable education funding, retention and recruitment of teachers, administrators, and staff, and student wellness and safety. The ASB membership has resolved to advocate for an increase in the base student allocation of not less than $1,413. This would account for an inflation using the Alaska Urban CPI data since the last major increase to the BSA in 2017. ASB also recommends incorporating an annual increase into the BSA to help account for the effects of inflation. A multiplier such as this exemplifies a philosophy of long-term investment in public education. ASB also advocates for an increase in funding for student transportation, which has remained stagnant since 2016. And one other thing I would like to mention is ASB is very appreciative of AML and others who are advocating for the need for investing in our school facilities across the state. We don't have good places for students to receive their education, and it's affecting our ability to do so. So with that, ASB urges that we invest in Alaska's prosperity and posterity through public education, and we must protect students' opportunities at all costs while investing wisely and continually monitoring and evaluating our progress. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Following Ms. O'Keefe will be Blue Scheibler. Ms. O'Keefe.
Thank you, Senator Keel and members of the committee. My name is Joan O'Keefe, and I live in Douglas. I'm the Executive Director of Southeast Alaska Independent Living. We serve seniors and people of all ages experiencing any sort of disability and help them live as independently as possible. People who reside in 20-plus communities scattered throughout the Southeast region, including hundreds of mental health trust beneficiaries. I'm here today to encourage you to take a hard look at the full slate of recommendations put forward by the trustees of the Alaska Mental Health Trust. Many of those important items are not funded in the governor's proposed budget or only partially funded. To highlight two of those items, first in the capital budget, home modifications and upgrades to retain housing is in the Department of Health and Division of Finance and Management. Funding for this program in the amended budget is short $575,000, less than the trustees recommend. The program provides housing modifications such as widening doorways, remodeling bathrooms, installing ramps. If these funds are cut, dozens of persons who experience disabilities will not be able to remain in their homes, not be able to age in place, and they will face assisted living, home care, or institutional placement at a much higher cost than living at home. Second, the trust recommended $133,500 for the long-term care ombudsman, which is in the Department of Revenue operating budget. This is not included in the governor's budget. The Alaska Long-Term Care Ombudsman's Office investigates complaints related to long-term care facilities, makes unannounced visits, educates seniors about their rights, and advocates on behalf of seniors. These funds would support an additional assistant ombudsman, and I urge you to fund this position. Lastly, real quickly, transit matching funding. This is in the capital budget. It's not in the capital budget, but it was up into FY18. It's general fund capital dollars to help transit providers with their local match requirements for various federal transit program grants. This state investment helps leverage more than three times as much federal funds to ensure that our local transit providers can access all the federal funding available for community transit. I urge you to support the $1 million in transit match funding and operating budget, and I thank you for this opportunity to address you today.
Thank you for your testimony. Nikki Love, you'll be in the on-deck chair. Ms. Scheibler.
Good morning. My name is Blue Scheibler, and I'm the Executive Director of the Southeast Alaska Association for Education of Young Children. I'm also here today as a member of a statewide early childhood advocacy group. We represent 9 nonprofit organizations who collectively advocate for the needs of families and children in Alaska. First, today I wanted to thank you all for your support last year of funding for the childcare sector. I've heard from dozens of childcare providers in Southeast Alaska about how much that meant to them. It made them feel really valued, and I think it kept a lot of people in the sector that maybe would have left otherwise. This year, we're looking for your leadership again. When we look at statistics such as 150 childcare businesses that have closed since 2018, 51% of families unable to participate in the workforce, and the steep decline of children ages birth to 8 in our state, it becomes clear that action needs to be taken this year to help turn the tide and support families. In this year's budget, we need a $30 million state match to federal childcare funding and a $5.2 million state match to Head Start funding. These funds will go far to support the governor's task force recommendation and ensure that our youngest residents have a quality early education to foster a great start in life. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Nikki Bowers, if you could get ready. Ms. Love.
Good morning. My name is Nikki Love. I am the coordinator for the Partnerships for Families and Children in Juneau, Alaska. I am also Alaska Native and a grandmother. I work closely with other early childhood coalitions throughout the state, and all of my colleagues have come to the same conclusion that we simply need more funding and support for all the early education programs. I echo many of the things that Blue said. She has the numbers. It's very simple. We need to do the federal matching so we can get those federal dollars. We need to continue to support our youngest citizens, or we will not have a future to grow old in and live independently. So thank you very much for your previous historic support, and I urge you to increase that support. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Before we go to Ms. Bowers, if Eleanor Lynch would get ready. Ms. Bowers, please.
Hi, my name is Nicole Bowers. I am the owner of Discovery Preschool, and I am here to speak in support of funding for childcare. Specifically, I would also like to see the state match some federal childcare funding in Alaska. I started working in the field in 2018, and my eldest son was about a year old. I started working at a daycare that was just starting when I had started, and it ended up closing less than 4 years later because we couldn't find staff. I moved over to Discovery and I bought it, but I would not have been able to buy it or make it work the way that it works without those grants that we were given last year. They make our operating possible. And if not for them, I would have not been able to buy it, and we probably would have closed. And it would have been another daycare that just couldn't operate because we couldn't pay to stay open. We don't have the costs for supplies and for staff without those grants. So in conclusion, I'm here to ask for funding to the operating budget to allow the monthly operating grants that we get every month to be implemented statewide, because I know that that's been very helpful and has been the difference between success and not being successful in the field, and keeping the daycare open, and it will help us become a more family-friendly state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Chair Keel. How many children does your center provide?
41 families.
41? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Paul Kelly, you'll be second spot there. Ms. Lynch.
Excuse me. My name is Eleanor Lynch. I'm currently living in Juneau. I'm speaking as an individual wildland firefighter, though I am not on the clock right now. It's my off season. I'm here to tell you how important the increased funding for fire crew pay in the DNR budget is to public safety and the economy. So the governor's budget includes $1.8 million for incentive pay for wildland firefighters. This matters because the Bureau of Land Management, which also operates in Alaska, pays 46% more than state crews do. So right out of high school, I joined a wildland firefighter crew. I've been doing it for many years. I was able to fund myself through a master's degree, like undergraduate master's, and my EMT school without any debt, because firefighting compensated me well because firefighting kept me in the state because I was able to receive training on designated training crews that were associated with the universities. None of that exists anymore. That door has closed behind me. All of those crews have shuttered because we cannot retain qualified leadership or overhead. We are turning away young Alaskans who want to work because we have no one to supervise them, because anyone who receives any training in Alaska crews is now moving over to the federal crews, which compensate them more highly, and we are filling in these gaps in our firefighting resources with crews we are flying up from the lower 48. This is not sustainable. This is more expensive for the state. This also, no other crew from any other state has Alaska as their highest priority. Alaskans have Alaska as their highest priority, and this is not safe or sustainable for our public or for our firefighters to have a lack of qualified leadership due to how little we pay firefighters. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. After Mr. Kelly, we will go to two testifiers online before I grudgingly hand the gavel back to Co-Chair Stedman. Ms. Mills will be next. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you. Co-chairs, Acting Chair Keel, members of the Senate Finance Committee, thank you for taking the opportunity to hear from us today. While I am a state employee, I am here on my own time and speaking for my community as an individual member of the Juneau Assembly. I do not speak for the full assembly. I am here to ask for a raise to the base student allocation funding in the operating budget. The proposed funding, when considering inflation, still amounts to a steep cut. As the Assembly's liaison to the School Board Finance Committee, I have been in the room as the school board has struggled through some very tough decisions over the last few weeks. When I served on the school board 2.5 years ago, all the fat had been cut. Now, in order to persist in their mission of educating the next generation, they're cutting into the meat. At the last retreat, they were talking about layoffs of as much as 20% of staff, closing schools, and reshuffling school configurations. This has caused a great deal of turmoil and uncertainty for our students, parents, teachers, and other public servants. With legal limits to how much we're allowed to fund, we as a community have been doing what we can for our students and our future. As inflation has eaten away at the value of the base student allocation, more and more of the burden is being passed along to our taxpayers. I ask the state to step up. Under the Constitution, you have a responsibility to fully fund education. Please raise the base student allocation funding to $1,413. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll now go online to Mary Ann Mills, who will be followed by Aaron Walker-Tolis. Ms. Mills.
Good morning. My name is Mary Ann Mills, and I am the president of AgeNet, Alaska's Association of Senior Service Providers. AgeNet stands for Alaska Geriatric Exchange Network, primarily made up of private nonprofit organizations founded in Alaska. AgeNet's goal is to help older Alaskans age in place, supporting them to live safely in their own homes and communities for as long as possible and avoid costly institutional care, such as hospitals and nursing homes. AgeNet strives to involve senior service providers in every area of the state so that statewide older Alaskans receive the local community-based services they need. Today, on behalf of AgeNet, I urge you to maintain the current fiscal year 24 funding level for senior community grants in FY25. Offered through the Alaska Division of Senior and Disability Services, community-based services made possible by these grants include nutritious meals with daily safety checks, transportation, exercise classes, and light housekeeping. There are also services to help older Alaskans with disabilities, such as adult day services, assistance with the activities of daily living, such as bathing or dressing, and counseling or respite services for their unpaid family caregivers to help them continue to care for their loved ones at home. Maintaining the current level of funding requires adding $2.7 million in general funds, without which services to older Alaskans throughout the state will decline significantly, risking their ability to live independently. With Alaska having the fastest growing population in the United States of older Alaskans, helping them age in their own homes makes economic sense. Last year, nearly 20,000 older Alaskans benefited from senior community grants at a cost of only $691 per year per client. In contrast, only 1,152 patients were served in Alaska nursing homes at a cost of over $148,000 per year per person. Also, since the population of Alaska seniors aged 75 and older increased 5% last year, with more vulnerable seniors to serve, AgeNet members urge you to support an additional $998,000 for a 5% increase in SDS community-based grants for fiscal year 2025. Community grants awarded by the Alaska Division of Senior and Disability Services help Alaska seniors to age in place. These grants offer a winning solution to our aging population. Older Alaskans prefer to stay in their own homes while these grants offer the least costly type of care. Most of our member agencies depend on grants to pay for staff and other expenses associated with senior services.
Ms. Mills, can you
wrap up, please? The Alaska SDS senior community grants are critical to helping local seniors remain safer in their own homes and communities, including nutrition and transportation services, adult day, senior in-home, family caregiver support, health promotion and disease prevention, Alzheimer's disease and related dementia, Medicare counseling and outreach, Center for Living, Independent Living Grants, Aging and Disability Resource Center. Thank you for the opportunity to communicate our requests and explain the importance of SDS community grants. Please contact me if you need any more information. I emailed you this testimony. Thanks so much. Thank you for your testimony,
Ms. Mills. Next up is Erin Walker-Tolles. Ms. Walker-Tolles.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. I would like to address the operating budget. My name is Erin Walker-Tolles. I'm Executive Director of Catholic Community Service, a regional nonprofit serving Southeast Alaska, including the program the Safe Child Advocacy Center. Today I'm here representing the Alaska Children's Alliance, a coalition of 19 CACs across Alaska. CACs provide forensic interviews for children with suspected child abuse and are a critical part of the public safety and justice system in Alaska and nationwide. We provide forensic interviews and medical exams in a neutral, trauma-informed way in a safe environment. In fact, Alaska statute requires that child sexual assault cases be referred to a child advocacy center. 10 years ago, the majority of CAC funding was general fund and covered close to 100% of our operating costs. Now we are dependent on federal funds, a combination of TANF, through Office of Children's Services, Victims of Crime Act funds through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and a one-time Department of Justice grant direct from the federal government. As the number of children referred by OCS and law enforcement continue to increase dramatically, we're facing an impending fiscal cliff for the program. With the end of Department of Justice funding and the anticipated 41% decrease in national VOCA funding, that would leave only the OCS funding and the funds that we raise ourselves to support our agencies. That would cover less than 50% of our operating costs, with only 35% of operating expenses covered by our Office of Children's Services grant. We're asking you to consider increasing the state funding to CACs by $5 million no later than fiscal year 26, to ensure that the 19 CACs in Alaska are able to continue the critical work we do on behalf of law enforcement and Office of Children's Services. The benefits are far less trauma to children who have experienced abuse and neglect, but also the benefit is to the state as a whole. The forensic interviews conducted by child advocacy centers are more defensible in court and relieve pressure and workload on both the court system and law enforcement. We encourage you to contact us if you have any additional questions, and we're hoping that you can support us to continue to provide this critical public safety service to children who've experienced abuse and neglect and their families. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll go now to some Prince William Sound and Kodiak testifiers, and then we'll have Senator Stebbins finish strong with Southern Southeast. Next online is Peter Hepner of Cordova. Mr. Hepner, please proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Thank you so much to the Senate Finance Committee, and good morning. I am Peter Hepner, and I'm the board president for the Cordova Family Resources Center, domestic violence, sexual assault, and prevention organization here in Cordova. I've been on this board for 19 years. CFRC was established in the fall of 1991, and our mission is to promote healthy individual and family relationships throughout the community by providing prevention, education, advocacy, and crisis response. As Cordova's greatest resource is its families. Cordova Family Resources facilitates Bionic, Believe It or Not, I Care, a student youth peer support program. We have a 24-hour helpline. We have programs for our children, Girls on the Run, and a program for the boys, Let Me Run. We have summer camps, and our advocates help people mitigate the or navigate the federal and state programs. Cordova community members and Cordova School District benefit from the trainings and workshops, such as the three kinds of touch trainings related to school staff being mandated reporters. CFRC assists local law enforcement through the sexual assault response team, and our advocates are called out when needed to assist victims in domestic violence cases. CFRC assists the courts as well as the fact that there's no Office of Children's Services here in Cordova, and CFRC helps facilitate those meetings. Our staff at CFRC is extremely busy. CFRC's main funding source is the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault and the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Outside of the many smaller grants that our executive director, Nicole Songer, is constantly searching out. I'm speaking very strongly against the proposed cut in the operating budget for the Department of Public Safety and the CDBSA grant line that is facing a cut of $4 million, a 20% cut. A 20% cut to the Cordova Family Resources would have a huge negative impact on our program. Almost $50,000, which equates to one advocate, and would have a huge impact on our ability to maintain our shelter. CFRC has been operating for 33 years, and we have the opportunity to provide safe shelter and an increasing need due to the lack of hotels and housing here in Cordova. A 20% cut would potentially put a halt to the shelter that Cordova desperately needs. Additionally, it would mean prevention programs that are flourishing in Cordova, working towards ending interpersonal violence, would need to be significantly scaled back, losing all the efforts and momentum gained toward ending interpersonal violence.
Mr. Hepner, if I can get you to sum up, please.
Thank you so much for taking this testimony.
Thank you very much. Terry Haynes of Kodiak, we'll come back to the room for Mr. Haynes.
Thank you, Senators, for your time and your hard work for all Alaskans. I'm also going to address the capital budget and the same subject as Mayor Branson. I won't repeat her description of St. Herman Harbor. It is, though, she described the living, beating heart of our economy of our region. And there, before you, as you look through all the worthy capital projects that are going to be before you, we realize that your capital budget is limited. You're going to have to prioritize which projects that you fund. I would argue that the St. Herman Harbor replacement should go right to the top of the list of your prioritized projects for two reasons. One is the fact that it is the heart of our regional economy. Without it, it's the 400 boats berthed there represent hundreds of individual businesses, some of which bring in tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars to our economy, some of which bring in millions of dollars to our economy, but they support all of our support businesses. And their fishermen that are based there fish throughout the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea. So it really is bringing in lots of economy into Alaska, and it's all based right there. It's our living, beating heart. But the problem is our heart needs a transplant. The patient is already far beyond its expected life expectancy, And it's, we literally have pilings that hold our harbor in place or falling over onto boats. Our harbor master is in the constant state of bandaging and fixing pilings. They've come up with tonight a way to have steel sleeves manufactured that they clamp around the pilings before they fall over. But it's not sustainable. The patient is definitely on life support right now. And we are ready to move forward. We have a good plan that we can go forward in phases. We're asking for a $5 million contribution from the state so that we can move forward right away. Because otherwise, the patient is not going to survive, and we're going to see an out-migration of all those businesses that really are critical to our regional economy.
Thank you, Mr. Haynes. Senator Bishop.
Mr. Haynes, Mayor Branson, I've toured your harbor this summer with the harbor master, and I can validate your comments 100%.
Thank you very much, Senator.
We're going to take a brief at ease before we go back online for public testimony.
Come back on the record, please. We'll now go to the city of Craig. Chris Reiten.
Yes, good morning, Senate Finance Committee. This is Chris Reiten with Craig City School District, and I thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony. I'm speaking to you today regarding the operating budget and requesting that the legislature increase public education funding by $1,413 inside the base student allocation. Our school district is currently facing a budget deficit of $1.5 million for FY25. As we're working through the budget process, we've already eliminated 5 teaching positions and 1 admin position for next year, and that doesn't get us close to the $1.5 million deficit. And we're not a school district that has a lot of bells and whistles. We're a very solid rural public school system, and to get to the $1.5 million, we wouldn't have a school system standing for next year. So we respectfully request additional funding for public education within the BSA of $1,413. I'd also like to briefly speak to capital projects, and in particular the major maintenance grant fund through the Department of Education Early Development. We are, you know, quite thankful that the governor and his budget put $4.2 million towards it. I would just ask the Senate Finance to look at the rest of the priority list that's been provided by the Department of Education Early Development. And the top 10 projects that are on that priority list, 5 have either a partial or entire roof replacements. And we would request that you fund down the list further, because once the roof starts going, it impacts critical building infrastructure components. With that, I end my testimony. I thank you so much for the work you do on behalf of all residents of the state of Alaska, and appreciate your good work. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Ketchikan, Lisa DeLate, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the community. My name is Lisa DeLatt, and I am from Ketchikan, representing the Ketchikan Wellness Coalition as the Crisis Now Community Director. My testimony is in reference to Senate Bills 186, 187, and 188. I would like to see the crisis services fully funded by the state of Alaska. The proposed $2 million of crisis services funding has been cut in the mental health operating budget to $750,000. With the funding support over the last year and a half, Ketchikan has been able to take huge steps forward. We are now ready in April to implement the mobile integrated healthcare program to respond to the medical and behavior health crises and prevent crises from escalating. We are at a critical point, and the lack of financial support could set us back and bring instability to the program. What we have started is not ready to be without a bit more help. The Ketchikan community has found some relief and excitement about the planning for crisis services. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority's funding support of the Crisis Now Community Director position, and the work that has been done in less than 2 years has sparked the fire department and the city of Ketchikan and other community partners to say yes to developing a mobile integrated program. The fire department has thought about a community paramedic program for the last 10 years, and it wasn't until I approached them with the mobile integrated healthcare idea that they thought it was possible. Our community partners are incredibly supportive and thankful for the effort to bring our community members services that will reduce the burden off of our first responders, emergency department at the hospital, and to get people the help that can lead to real progress toward improving their social factors, which impact their determinants of health and well-being. Ketchikan's two youth behavioral health organizations are in the midst of expanding their services to include crisis stabilization and services that prevent the need for higher levels of care, especially involuntary care. To help with the housing crisis, the homelessness crisis, the staffing crisis, drug and alcohol crisis, Ketchikan's moving forward with permanent supportive housing, navigation center, programming in shelters, medically assisted treatment with transportation and housing, a youth center with supports, a wellness recovery center, and other projects. And search is coming to Ketchikan because our people need it. Crisis services are essential to meeting the needs of our communities.
Elisa?
Especially our most vulnerable populations. Please restore the Startup Crisis Now grants and the crisis service grants. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Please keep your testimony to 2 minutes because we will not be able to get everybody's testimony on if you run over. Well, now stay in Ketchikan. Melissa Bryan, please.
Good morning, esteemed members of the committee. My name is Melissa O'Brien. I am with Ketchikan Indian Community Housing Authority. I am here today to urge your strong support for funding SB 186, 187, and 188, specifically today focusing on the Homeless Assistance Program and the Special Needs Housing Grants in Alaska. These programs play a crucial role in providing essential services to our community members who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. Our tribal community and our community as a whole is seeing an increase in homelessness and those seeking support services. This is exacerbated by a housing crisis that is overwhelming our resources as is. The Homeless Assistance Program is instrumental in supporting homeless shelters and community organizations that offer vital services. These programs form a critical continuum of care that helps families in our community secure safe and stable housing, working alongside nonprofit partners to create sustainable, supportive housing solutions over time. Reducing fundings for these programs would severely impact the resources available to those who rely on these services for support and stability. Similarly, the Special Needs Housing Grant plays a pivotal role in addressing the housing needs of Alaska's special needs population. Through competitive grants, this program supports both long- and short-term housing solutions, particularly focusing on permanent supportive housing for individuals who are homeless and have disabling or chronic conditions. This targeted support is essential for our at-risk population, ensuring they have access to housing coupled with necessary services for a better quality of life. The governor's amended budget does not include the recommended funding, risking the continuity and effectiveness of these vital programs. It is imperative that we prioritize the well-being and stability of our community members by ensuring adequate funding for these essential housing and support services. Thank you for your time and your consideration. I appreciate all the work you do for our Alaskan communities.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll now go to Petersburg, Jennifer Reiner. Petersburg Medical Center.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jennifer Reiner, and I live and work in Petersburg. I am the middle of five generations currently living in Petersburg. It is my home. I have been a registered nurse for the past 29 years, and I have worked my entire career at Petersburg Medical Center. We are a 12-bed critical access hospital with an attached nursing home and outpatient clinic. We also have home health services and other assorted community-based services. I am now the chief nursing officer, and I have had the opportunity to see how important the locally owned and controlled hospital is to our community, how that is important to friends, families, and neighbors. A high-functioning hospital is vital to the medical and economic health of the community. Petersburg Medical Center has been in need of a replacement facility for many years, and we are moving towards a replacement facility to continue to function for our community. Our replacement hospital building is the number one state and federal priority for the Petersburg Borough. We have been working diligently on a smart design of a new facility that minimizes space needs
maximizes staffing efficiency, and minimizes the impact to the neighborhood that we will be moving into. We don't want to build a big, shiny building. We want to ensure a safe, efficient environment so we can continue to provide care that in a building that is up to code. We have secured funding for the first phase of our project, and a local subcontractor is preparing the new site as we speak. We need your support to move into the next phase of our project, as well as to encourage other funders to participate in our program. For the next phase, we need $37 million to complete the building shell. Our new building will allow our community to continue to receive emergency and hospital care, will allow our nursing home residents to remain in their community, and will allow Petersburg to attract new residents of all ages. It will also continue to contribute $12 million of salaries directly into Petersburg's economy, keeping Petersburg strong and thriving. Thank you for your time, and I ask you to support our new building project for our hospital.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, Jennifer. We'll now go to Sitka, Natalie Warjack.
Hi, good morning. My name is Natalie Wojcik, and I'm the Executive Director of Dickens Against Family Violence in Sitka. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify today. I am asking for an increase in funding to the grants line in the CDVSA budget within the Department of Public Safety. SAFE is a domestic violence and sexual assault shelter advocacy and prevention agency. Currently, SAFE has the only year-round shelter of any kind in Sitka. With the escalation of prices in housing, it has become more and more difficult for individuals on the margins of our society to maintain safe and permanent housing. The inaccessibility and cost of housing in Sitka has led to a steady increase in shelter numbers. Last fiscal year, there were 285 bed nights per month on average at SAFE, but since October of last year, we have seen between 400 to 500 bed nights per month at SAFE. If SAFE receives a 20% cut to services that's on the board, this impact would be drastic and come in a time of great need for survivors in Sitka. It is difficult to determine how we would slash an already bare-bones budget just to maintain operations. A 20% cut could only come from personnel. We would need to cut our entire on-call budget for advocate shifts. Any additional services and supports that happen outside of the shelter would not be manageable. Staff would be unable to provide robust systems advocacy, support legal clients at the court setting, or respond to sexual assault response calls. We'd be mainly just focusing on the shelter. Due to the past years of flat funding, it has been difficult to adequately pay our staff to keep up with inflation. A drastic cut to funding would make it even more unmanageable to staff our shelter and provide life-saving services to victims of violence in our community. Please consider supporting the basic needs of survivors in our state. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. We'll now go to Rod Morrison from Thorn Bay.
Thank you for letting me testify this morning. My name is Rod Morrison, Superintendent of Southeast Island in Thorn Bay, Alaska. I'm calling to support the operating budget and increase the BSA of 1413. The Southeast Island School District is facing dire situation. Because of past budget shortfalls, SISD does not have its central positions, such as a counselor, school nurse, CTE teacher, librarian, music teacher, or art teacher. We also don't have money. Our kids have to fundraise for all the sports travel. The budget doesn't contribute to that. We're really struggling to meet the basic needs of our students here. We've been forced to cut staff, including reducing hours of many classified to part-time because we can't afford to pay their health benefits. And that lowers the classified people's applicants we have. Our school facilities are experiencing major maintenance issues, including HVAC system failures, boiler issues, and safety concerns. I have two schools with diesel boilers that are broken and they're not functioning in the Village of Kassan and Whale Pass. To save money, in the past, we've applied and received grants for biomass boilers, wood boilers, and thankfully both of those schools have wood boilers, but without the diesel, we risk broken pipes and freeze-ups. We do not have the fund balance to address either of these repairs. Furthermore, with the implementation of the REACH Act and the required assessments, the district doesn't have enough allocation of funds to make sure that act is being implemented with fidelity. I also like to draw attention to a couple of other critical points. Funding the Alaska school system is a constitutional duty. Most students in Alaska attend public school. The continuous neglect and underinvestment in public education must end for the benefit of all students and families. I trust that you'll consider these pressing concerns and take decisive action to address our urgent needs in Southeast Island School District. Your support of public education is paramount to ensuring that students have a well-rounded education. They are our future leaders. Without additional
Morrison,
increase
can you finish up?
Yeah.
Can you finish up, please?
Yes, absolutely. We're going to be faced with cutting 50% of our principals, 12% of our current staff, and other major cuts. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. We'll now go to Patricia Gilbert of Wrangell.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chairman. Two items. The first, Wrangell's wooden earth and dams constructed in 1905 contain our only source of drinking water, and they are in need of repair and stabilization. In 2015, the Alaska Department of Natural Resources identified Wrangell's dams as the second worst in the state. Today, it's the worst. An Army Corps of Engineers study from 2006 classified the dams as poor with a high hazard potential and identified 50 homes and nearly 40 residents at risk in a flood zone if the reservoirs fail. A sum of $5 million has been appropriated from the general fund to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development as a grant to the city for dam safety and stabilization improvements. Please maintain this FY24 supplemental appropriation for the Wrangell Dam Safety Upgrades Project. And then also briefly, in support of funding for Alaska Public Broadcasting, during the recent landslide of November 20th, KSTK, our only radio station, played a vital role in relaying information to residents on the south side of the landslide who were cut off from communication and electrical power. And we have incorporated KSTK, our local radio station, into our emergency operation plan to the tune of where they will
Well, Mayor Gilbert, thank you for your testimony. We're running short of time, so we've got four people left, and we're going to go now to Kodiak, Kimberly Dolph.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm requesting an increase to the CDVSA grants line in the Department of Public Safety. I participate in direct services and backup the sexual assault response team in Kodiak. People who have been sexually assaulted benefit from an advocate being with them through the criminal justice process, from talking through the reporting options, explaining the interview process, being with them as evidence in the kit is collected, to follow-ups. We stand with them as the perpetrator goes to trial and are with them to help process the verdict and as they feel their way through to some normalcy and moving forward with their life. We are the only shelter in our area for victims, and our victims need us, rather they are going through the justice system or not. We are always with them. Help us continue to be that support. Thank you for your time and the work you do on behalf of victims.
And thank you for being short, because we are definitely getting out of time. Penny Lampe from Kodiak.
Yes, this is Penny Lample, and I'm calling from the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center. I am the shelter coordinator and the sexual assault team coordinator. I'd like to thank the chairman and the Senate committee members for their hard work on the budget. I work in direct services here in Kodiak, and I'm requesting an increase to the CDVSA grants line in the Department of Public and Safety. We are the only shelter in our area that services over 15,000 people. This includes seven villages. We are the only place our victims have to come to on our island victims would be on the streets if we were not here to assist them. We have a huge Native and immigrant community where we live. We have a full sexual assault program at our shelter. Without this, victims would first have to fly from the village, then fly out of Kodiak all the way to Anchorage for services. This would be unacceptable as it could take days with our weather issues. I hope you're able to adjust this funding so we can keep our direct services for our victims and their children. Thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, thank you. Rebecca Shields in Kodiak, please.
Hello, and thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Rebecca Shields, and I'm the Executive Director of the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center in Kodiak. And I am calling to ask today that you increase the CDBSA budget within the Department of Public Safety, and to say that the services that we provide in Kodiak, our direct services for the victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, it's collaborative services with our partners in Kodiak, in which we work hard for the marginalized and traumatized in Kodiak to get all of the resources that they need. And we do outreach, education, and prevention in Kodiak. Our services are and work as the safety net for marginalized victims who suffer, and we are first on the ground responding to them. Cuts in this programming would devastate our ability to be able to respond to the needs of these victims. The funding that we receive from the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault goes directly to paying our staff, and our staff members are our greatest resource in being able to, our only resource in being able to provide these services. And it would mean a cut in our ability to be on the ground and to respond to victims. We have our immigrant women's program in which we help. Kodiak is an area that has a large immigrant population. We have our sexual assault response team. We have our community coordinated response team. We have our shelter and case management, outreach and education. All of these areas would be greatly devastated by budget cuts. We have also had
Rebecca, can you finish up, please? Rebecca,
yes.
You need to finish up.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time today, and I will end there. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Last up, Julie Vevnar from Juneau.
Hi, my name is Julie Vevnar. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thanks for letting me testify. I'm a mother of a kindergartner, a third grader in the Juneau School District, as well as an Alaskan concerned about the future of Alaska. Please amend the budget to increase education funding. This budget does not fully fund education, but amounts to a significant cut from last year. This budget does not help districts maintain status quo when insurance and fuel costs have increased significantly from last year, and will lead to teacher cuts, school closures, and program cuts. With BSA bills in the limbo, please do something to stabilize the dramatic budget shortfalls that the districts are facing. I also, in addition, request that you guys add an annual inflation adjustment to the school budget. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. That concludes the public testimony this morning. We will reconvene at 1 o'clock this afternoon. We'll have Fairbanks, the Interior, Delta Junction, Tope, Copper River Valley, Glen Allen, and the Offnets, and Senator Bishop will be playing chairman and referee of the public testimony. We are adjourned at, no, we're adjourned. Yeah, we'll adjourn at 10:27. We are adjourned.